Welcome to a Friday the 13th edition of the Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, April the 13th. We wish you nothing but luck today, and we are fortunate to have with us two guests from different political viewpoints to talk with us about all the top state and national news stories of the week. We will talk about Rick Santorum being out of the presidential race and recall candidates in Wisconsin who are in, and whatever else you would like to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. Tony Palmieri is with us, professor of communication at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Scene newspaper in the Fox Valley. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
And Steve Prestigard is with us, author of the Presta blog. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I guess Tony is anchoring the northeast side of Highway 44, and I'm anchoring the southwest side of Highway 44.
I think so.
I could go up to UW Oshkosh and we could do this in the same office, except that with all the construction at 41, I'm not sure you could actually physically get there.
That's true.
When is that 41 going to be finished anyway? That's been going on forever, hasn't it?
At least another 3 or 4 years, I believe.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, I guess I'll just live with it. Well, happy Friday the 13th as well. Are you superstitious, Steve?
No, although I might become superstitious if suddenly in the middle of this I get dropped from the call or something like that.
Now that has never happened.
My laptop's already acting like my laptop acts like it's Friday the 13th every day, so that's not anything different.
Yeah. Well, Tony, you're not superstitious.
No, I agree with Steve.
Yeah, let's talk about. There's lots to talk about here, but I think I'll bring up the dueling wars against women. We have now Republicans saying that the Democrats, President Obama, is waging a war against stay-at-home moms, based on a Democratic consultant's comments about Mitt Romney's wife. We had Hillary Rosen the other day saying that Ann Romney should not talk about women and the economy because in an interview she said Ann Romney hasn't worked a day in her life. And a big furor erupted over those comments. Rosen did apologize. President Obama weighed in last night saying that Rosen's statement was the wrong thing to say, that raising children is hard work, and that he also thought that the spouses of candidates should be off limits to campaign criticism. Let me ask you first, Tony, what do you make of this this uproar?
Well, everybody agreed immediately that what Hillary Rosen said was incredibly stupid. I mean, it took the Obama administration about 3 seconds to distance themselves from it. I mean, you know, ultimately, when it comes to women voters, and Obama is way, way ahead among women voters, it's going to boil down to the prior record of Obama and Romney and what they're calling for now. And the fact of the matter is that the Republican Party and Romney are waging this so-called war on women. So the idea that one stupid comment on CNN somehow takes away the records of these candidates and what they're proposing, I think that's a little bit absurd.
Mm-hmm. Steve, what do you think?
Well, it's not just the one comment. You know, what we're seeing out of the Democrats is not, it is an ideological, or let me rephrase that, it's a war against the women who don't toe the Democratic Party line, and, you know, that includes stay-at-home mothers, that includes mothers who are, women, I should say, who are opposed to abortion rights, that includes, people who don't toe the liberal line. This is not a new thing in the Democratic Party. Tony, I'm sure, remembers what his state representative, Gordon Hintz, said to another state representative from Oshkosh, Michelle Lynchens, a year ago. And we've seen horribly vile personal attacks on the lieutenant governor, Rebecca Clayfish, on state senator Pam Galloway, and that you know, to be honest about it, I don't think either of those is going to have an impact on the November election. But let's, you know, consider that this is not something that is a new thing. If you don't toe the liberal line, apparently, if you're female, you don't toe the Democratic Party line, it's open season on you, apparently. Mm-hmm. And this is just the most recent example of it.
Tony?
Oh, I disagree. The fact of the matter is Obama is way ahead of Romney among women voters at all age groups. I mean, among women under 50, I believe he's about 18 points ahead right now. I mean, women voters are looking at where these candidates stand. They're looking at what the Republicans have been doing over the last year or two. And quite frankly, the majority of women are finding it frightening. And the majority of women will look at a comment like Hillary Rosen's and, like men, will say, gee, that's a stupid comment. But when push comes to shove, they're going to look at what these candidates are standing for. And it's at this point, it's not even close. I mean, you've got Governor Romney saying if he gets elected, he wants to end Planned Parenthood, get rid of it. Well, the fact is, Planned Parenthood is popular with women, whether they're liberal, moderate, and even some conservatives. So, you know, Romney has locked himself into a corner where he's taking positions to get the Republican nomination that are, you know, hostile to lots of women voters. And the, you know, the things that Steve is mentioning, you know, they're nice sideshows, but they're not going to be enough to get women voters to think they better vote Republican instead of Democrat.
I'm going to take a call. Dave in Wanakee, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I wanted to talk about the difference between how the GOP acts and how Democrats act. You have a big kerfuffle over something a Democrat said. However, the GOP tried to enact into law the Blunt Amendment, which would have allowed insurance companies to decide for themselves whether or not something would be paid for, like access to birth control. They also tried to push through laws to have vaginal inspections prior to abortions. They've Scott Walker repealed the equal pay investigation enforcement. The GOP just attacks women because they want them barefoot and pregnant and keep their man happy.
All right. What do you say to that, Steve?
I'm not sure that I can respond to 74 different cliches like I just heard in the past 10 seconds or so.
Well,
to assume that all women believe that what he appears to be saying, which is that you know, that all women believe in insurance companies being required to pay for birth control, that employers who are paying for health insurance don't necessarily agree with on a moral basis. The assumption here appears to be that all women adhere to the most liberal Democratic line on all of these issues. And, you know, Mitt Romney is not going to be able by himself.
Steve, is pay equity liberal Democratic?
It's not a government agency.
Yeah, let's zero in, Steve, on the Equal Pay Enforcement Act, which was the last thing that Dave brought up, which is the most recent as well. Governor Walker signed a bill on last Friday, just before the holiday weekend, that would repeal the Equal Pay Enforcement Act in Wisconsin. This would makes it easier for women who believe, and others who believe, that they are victims of wage discrimination to take their employers to court in the state of Wisconsin, to state courts.
I'm sorry, who do you want to go first?
I'll let you zero in on that, Steve, because our caller said that was an example of the war on women.
No, that is not an example of the war on women. That's an example of not being interested in feeding the wallets of lawyers. You know, you still have the administrative process through the Equal Rights Division. That has not changed at all. And I would think that the main purpose of filing a complaint is to get paid, not to throw money at lawyers. Moreover, the state has absolutely no ability to change someone's ability to file a lawsuit in the federal courts, which is probably going to be more effective anyway. This was a law that undoes a law that was passed, I believe it was in 2009, by the Doyle administration, simply to feed lawyers. That's all that is. The The administrative ability to file complaints hasn't changed, and the ability to file a lawsuit in federal court hasn't changed.
No, well, Tony, this was a war on greedy lawyers.
Yeah, good luck with that position as we go toward the recall elections. I mean, the fact is, Steve, whether women are liberal, moderate, or conservative, almost all believe in pay equity. And you've got the Republicans nationally, and you've got Scott Walker at the state level, and the Republicans here that are waging this war on pay equity. I mean, Mitt Romney could not even bring himself to support the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which really is a no-brainer. And that was the first bill that Barack Obama signed when he became president. So, you know, Steve saying that this is about women who don't toe the liberal Democratic line, you know, the fact is, on things like pay equity, women of all ideological stripes are on the same page, and the Republicans are not getting it done on this issue. And I think they're going to pay for it at the polls, and we're seeing that in public opinion polls. Barack Obama has got a huge lead right now among voters and among women voters. And so far, nothing Romney or the Republicans have said is making that any better.
Let me take a call from Tim now in Ladysmith. Hello, Tim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think, specifically, I appreciate your last comment, Steve. Tony, I think you are pretty much a pretty typical spin of what liberal Democrats like to use, and that is this constant spin that all women are pretty much pro-abortion, pretty much far left. One of the reasons the Democrats tend to lead with women is because the Democrats are the entitlement party. They like to spin that if you vote Democrat, we will make sure that we take care of you because that's what the government's here for. And so I think sometimes Democrats like to have women dependent on the government because it assures votes.
All right, Tony, what do you think of that?
Wow. I think Tim has succeeded in one phone call of insulting a lot of women voters out there. Women voters, men voters are looking for very similar things from government. They want a level playing field. And the Republican Party, especially over the last few years, has said very clearly they do not support a level playing field. They support the top 1%. And as regards women's issues, you know, a growing number of women are looking at this election cycle and saying, is this 2012 or 1812? I mean, some of these policies coming out are just absolutely bizarre. So it's really, you know, it's not about anyone wanting entitlement. It's about people wanting a government that allows everyone to play by the same set of rules, that stands for pay equity and doesn't defend pay inequity. That's a losing proposition for the Republican Party, and I think they're going to pay for it among Republican voters this cycle.
Let's get Barb and Barron on now. Hi, Barb.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like your guest to respond to, I believe it was Senator Goldman, State Senator Goldman's comment earlier this week that I heard on WPR, that, of course, men should be paid more than women because they have to support their families. Now, that's something that I haven't heard probably in 40 years, and now I hear it coming
Thank you, Barb. I think those comments, if I remember them correctly, were more along the lines of women don't care as much about money or making as much money as men, and women's salaries are lower than men's because they take time off of work to raise babies and that sort of thing. But he did take some heat for those comments. Is Steve Prestigard?
Well, first off, the fact is this election is going to be based on the economy, the presidential election. It's not going to be based on, you know, who has what position on women's issues. But, you know, if you were talking about two people, one of whom hasn't been in the workforce as long as the other because she took time off to raise children to be a stay-at-home mother, you know, that's going to happen. And I don't think there's anything particularly shocking about that. I think it's, you know, people, if you have two candidates and one is, and one has less experience in the workforce than the other, then it would not be surprising that one gets less pay than the other. Although, to be honest about it, employers really make the decisions on pay based on what they can afford and based on, you know, which candidate has the best, meets the requirements for the position the best. I can make a really cynical comment at this point about that issue, but I'm not going to. I'm simply going to say that you know, this election, regardless of the last few minutes, is not going to be decided on who's got what position on a law that got repealed this year. It's going to have everything to do with the economy and really nothing else.
Do you agree with that, Tony?
Well, you know, we started off by talking about Glenn Grothman. I didn't hear his comments, but, you know, Senator Grothman is so far on the fringe right wing that I'm sure I agree with Barb that it was probably something that we haven't heard in many, many years. I think the Republican Party nationally and at the state level have put women's issues squarely on the table. I mean, they clearly have been trying to move the clock back. And I think a growing number of women voters are saying we've had enough. And this is showing in the public opinion polls. I mean, the lead that President Obama has against Romney right now among women voters, it's an unprecedented gender gap. That's how far the gap is right now. You know, I think Romney is catching on that, yeah, he better come up with some program that will tell women voters that we can do something in the economy to help women, but he's got a long way to move in that direction. I mean, Romney has had to move so far to the right to get this nomination that it's questionable now whether he'll be able to move back to the center.
Let me mention that we did invite Senator Glenn Grothman to join us for our state capitol report on Monday morning to talk more about this pay equity or Equal Pay Enforcement Act, and we are waiting to see if he's available for that. If so, we'll have him on at 7:30. One more question on this issue, and then we will move on to others, I promise. But there was a New York Times editorial yesterday, Steve, that said Governor Walker really stepped in it by signing this repeal of the Equal Pay Enforcement Act at this time, and that this was going to hurt him during his upcoming recall election. What about Governor Walker's and the recalls?
I didn't read the editorial, but I can tell you that the New York Times is wrong in their estimation. This is not going to make a difference. So I find it interesting that this state survived for, and I can't do the math quickly, but the first, I don't know, 160 years or so without allowing lawsuits in state court over pay equity issues. And all of a sudden, Jim Doyle discovered this horrible situation in 2009, rammed it through he got the legislature was perfectly fine with signing it. His predecessors never saw that as an issue. Predecessor legislatures never saw this as an issue. And all that Walker did was restore the law to where it was before. And once again, it did not affect the ability of women to file actions in with the state Equal Rights Division or in the federal courts. It just took money potential money out of lawyers' pockets. It isn't going to make a bit of difference in the recall elections. The recall elections are all going to be about the collective bargaining reforms, and that's it. There is not any other issue that's going to make a difference in the recall elections. Mm-hmm. And we should have seen that, you know, months ago. I love it when, you know, you have these New York Times or national media people who drop in and come up with issues that do not exist. If they were paying attention to what's going on in state politics, they would know that the recalls are about public employee collective bargaining, and that's all they're about.
Mm-hmm. Tony?
You know, the Democrats running in the recall election, they're all saying that Governor Walker ran for office on a jobs economy platform, and it became clear shortly after he got in, it really is about an ideological agenda. And that's what we're seeing with something like the repeal of this law. There was no reason to repeal this law. It has barely even taken effect. If you've watched news coverage of it this week, the law repealed really hasn't even been used that much lately. So to repeal it at this point was pure ideology, and I think that is definitely going to hurt the governor in the recall, especially among the independent voters who are going to swing this election, who are believing, you know, in November of 2010, we thought we were voting for someone who was all about the economy, all about jobs, and it's clear that he's not. He's about an ideological agenda and putting that in force regardless of whatever happens.
We will talk more about recall politics a little bit later in our Week in Review. After this short break, we'll talk about other issues that are coming up on the presidential campaign trail. And we'll welcome your input, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Tony Palmieri, a professor of communication at UW Oshkosh, and Steve Prestigard, who is author of the Presta blog. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Later today, it's your views on the news from 4 until 5. John Munson in for Ben Marins, talking with a guest about the top news stories of the week. And we are doing the same thing during this hour, talking with Tony Palmieri and Steve Prestigard. And we invite your input to 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Well, this week, Rick Santorum suspended his presidential campaign, which surprised a lot of people. Steve, wasn't Rick Santorum going to stay in at least through his Pennsylvania home state primary?
Well, you commit an error in believing that politicians tell the truth very often. Either that or, I'm a little bit shocked, frankly, that apparently he did not get much of a boost from being in Ripon 10 or 11 days ago. I think part of it had to do with his daughter. I think most of it had to do with the fact that the math just doesn't work anymore. It didn't work for Santorum. It's not going to work for Newt Gingrich either. And I think Santorum made the right decision because, to be honest about it, I think Rick Santorum, had he gotten the nomination, would have gotten approximately 20 votes nationwide from non-Republicans. And that, by the way, is about double the number of votes that Newt Gingrich would get nationwide from non-Republicans if he got the nomination. At some point, reality has to hit, and you have to realize that it's just not going to work for Santorum in this election or probably any other election.
Yeah, and do you think Mitt Romney is going to appease the base, Steve?
I think there's a few opportunities to do. I think, for one thing, what happens with Obamacare in the Supreme Court has the potential to very much energize the base. It's really kind of a no-win situation, really, for Obama, I suspect. I think the vice presidential choice, although that's somewhat overrated, has the ability to energize the base. I think that Republicans are going to look at the opportunity of another 4 years of Barack Obama as the president, and say, we can't deal with that. You know, if I were Mitt Romney, I would be hammering every day, every hour, the statement that Ronald Reagan made in 1980. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And if he can get that message across to non-Republican, non-conservative voters, he can win the election.
Do you think he's right, Tony?
Yeah, you started off, Joy, talking about Santorum. I think that he did well enough winning 11 states or so that he's probably going to have a very prominent place at the convention. And he may have now pressured Romney, assuming Romney gets the nomination, to put a social conservative on the ticket for vice president. And I'm not sure that necessarily helps the Republican Party nationally, but I do believe the worst mistake the Democrats could make is to underestimate Romney. He clearly had to run to the right in order to get this nomination. In the general election, he'll be able to run more to the center, more independent, which I actually think will widen his appeal So I think the Democrats need to be careful. I mean, I think there's a reason why the Obama people would rather have run against Santorum or Gingrich. And I think Steve hit the nail on the head. Santorum and Gingrich have very, very little appeal outside of a certain portion of Republican voters. Romney is someone who, if he can find a message, you know, can appeal to a wider group of voters.
Do you think, Steve, that Paul Ryan is a strong contender for running mate?
No. Nor is Scott Walker, nor is, and this is the one I heard yesterday, Ron Johnson is a potential VP candidate.
Really?
And I am confident in saying that none of those are going to happen. You know, at the risk of being permanently banned from Wisconsin public radio forever, I would point out Wisconsin's really not that important in terms of national politics.
You're banned, that's it.
We have a grand total of 10 electoral votes in this state. We have a history of sending, we have a history of voting for Democrats for president, whether or not we should vote for Democrats for president. I'm confident in sitting here that Barack Obama is going to win Wisconsin in November, regardless of what the national results are. And if the Democrats want to continue to waste money on, you know, the Wisconsin campaign of Obama for president, hey, more power to them. They've already got enough things to waste money on, but, you know, that's fine. I think Tony's right. They will have some kind of social conservative for vice president. But the thing that I think Romney also needs to get across, in addition to the whole economy issue, is it's kind of similar, really, to Tommy Thompson running for the U.S. Senate, in that it's very easy for Newt Gingrich in the House or Rick Santorum in the Senate to sit there and merely vote and make speeches and all of that. Governors, regardless of whether they're Republicans or Democrats, are required to get things done. And you could argue, I think, effectively, that Romney Care, for instance, was that mandate to get something done, whether or not it was done right or not. Mitt Romney, when he was president or when he was governor, never had anything close to a working plurality in the Massachusetts legislature. And so he had to do things that he probably would have preferred not to. But you have to get stuff done when you're a governor. And, you know, Tony's right. That's the sort of thing that I think will appeal to non-aligned voters, even if it doesn't, you know, appeal to Republicans.
Let me get a quick comment from Tony before we move on to some other issues on the speculation that Paul Ryan or maybe even Governor Scott Walker, I hadn't heard Senator Ron Johnson as mentioned, but that they could possibly be in contention for vice president.
Well, I mean, Paul Ryan is youthful and he's, you know, fairly articulate, more charismatic probably than Mitt Romney. But if Romney chooses Ryan, he then has to really be running with the Ryan budget plan the whole campaign cycle. And I'm not really sure he wants to do that. You know, Marco Rubio from Florida is a possibility, but he might outshine Romney. My guess would be that Romney will select someone who's recognized as being competent, but is also a favorite of, say, the Tea Party, where the energy is at the grassroots level for the Republicans these days. So, I mean, some people are throwing out the name of Rob Portman from Ohio, former congressman, former budget director for the second Bush administration. So, you know, we'll see. I don't expect that Paul Ryan will get it, because I don't think Romney wants to be saddled that much with the Ryan budget plan.
Well, let's talk a little bit about President Obama on the campaign trail this week, pushing for the Buffett rule, raising taxes on the very richest Americans. Starting with you, Tony, is this a good strategy? Is this a good policy?
Yeah, I mean it's popular. I mean, the Buffett rule is very simple. I mean, if you're a millionaire, you ought to at least be paying at the same rate as Warren Buffett's secretary. And the Republicans keep saying things like, well, you know, even if this passed, it's not really going to raise that much money. Well, so what? It's the principle. I mean, I think this is a winning issue for Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Steve?
I don't think there is no poll evidence that indicates that raising taxes is a winning political issue. More importantly, It's not going to be a winning issue as far as the economy goes. If we have to remember something, that not merely the Buffett rule, but which, by the way, would fund government for 12 hours out of an entire year, but there are a bunch of tax cuts that are going to go away at the end of this year. At the end of this year, if Obama is reelected, and if you want to tank the economy in 2013, just go ahead and let them go away. You've got the tax cuts that were passed during the Bush administration. There are others as far as dividends, different rates for dividends, and all of those are set to go away at the end of this year. And, you know, Republicans were complicit in having that particular setup. If the economy, you know, if you're happy with the economy being even worse than it is right now, then you should really support the Buffett rule. And by the way, I think I've said this before during this show, I don't have the least bit of belief that Buffett really believes in what he's talking about as far as his own tax rates, because Warren Buffett pays people to make sure that his taxes are lower than the feds would want them to be, because the vast majority of Warren Buffett's income is dividend income from Berkshire Hathaway. It's not wage income. And if he was really serious about tax fairness and all of that, he could simply rearrange his finances and get paid a higher salary and then pay more in taxes. And I guarantee you that if this Buffett thing came, if the Buffett rule ever became law, Warren Buffett would continue to pay tax professionals to reduce his taxable income.
Let me jump in with Linda in Monroe. Linda, go ahead.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
While the Republicans are always crying for lower income taxes, like Representative Paul Ryan's budget of a top rate of 25%, President Obama got a number of wealthy millionaires and billionaires together and said that they wouldn't mind at all paying a higher individual income tax rate to help pay off the growing debt. That impressed me, but the Republicans, along with Representative Ryan, aren't impressing me on how they're going to pay for the debt. And what do you think?
There is no level of taxation, realistic level of taxation, that can pay off the federal debt or even the deficit by itself. The only way you're going to cut the deficit is, there's two ways you're going to cut the deficit. Number one is by economic growth, and tax levels have a lot to do with that. And the second thing is you're going to have to cut federal spending. The federal government wastes money about as often as, you know, people breathe. And again, to go back to what I said before, all of those millionaires, I guarantee you, pay tax professionals and financial professionals to arrange their finances so they reduce their taxes.
Yeah.
There's not a single one of those people who could not write a check right now to the federal government to pay off the debt. There is a post office box for that. And since they're not doing that, I really don't give them any credibility, you know, what their opinion is on taxes.
Let's give Tony a chance to weigh in.
I think Linda's right on target. Here's the thing. The Republicans are set to nominate a multimillionaire as their standard bearer to run for president, Mr. Romney. We have about 55,000 millionaires in this country that pay a lower tax rate than millions and millions of middle-class Americans. You know, the idea that Romney is going to stand with those 55,000 millionaires as opposed to the multi-millions of middle class, that's absurd. And, you know, Steve is wrong about balancing this budget, getting rid of the deficit. Bill Clinton, in the early 90s, did raise the taxes on the very rich, and he was the last president to balance the budget. And he did it partially with tax increases on the rich. You know, so this idea that tax increases on the very wealthy don't contribute to a balanced budget, I mean, from recent history, we know that's not true.
Let me move on to a couple of other national issues, and then we'll devote the end of the program to recall politics in Wisconsin. There was a lot of attention to Republican Congressman Alan West this week when he said more than 75 Democratic congressmen are communists. His office later said he was referring to members of the Progressive Caucus. Tony, any thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, Alan West is a joke and has been for a long time. Look at what the Progressive Caucus stands for. Pay equity, living wages, health care for all Americans, things that huge majorities of people support. So I guess by Alan West's definition, the overwhelming number of American citizens are communists also.
Quick react, Steve.
The Congressional Progressive Caucus, which includes Tammy Baldwin and Glenn Moore, by the way, also support tax policies that would leave people in Wisconsin paying more than half of their income in taxes. I don't know that, you know, whether you want to call progressive, socialist, communist, whatever. I don't know many people who think that's really good. I did look at their platform, their website last night, and I think if you want to ruin this country, you should follow the Congressional Progressive Caucus platform and that ridiculous people's budget.
Let me move on to another issue as we need to get a lot more in. News on the Trayvon Williams shooting this week. He will be charged with second-degree murder, or was charged with second-degree murder, a special prosecutor announcing that this week. There have also been calls for repeal of the stand-your-ground-type laws in states around the country. Tony, your thoughts on the developments in the Trayvon Martin case and whether or not stand-your-ground laws should be repealed?
Well, the family has wanted an arrest and a legal process to go forward, so it looks like that will happen. And so, you know, emotions may be calmed for at least a little bit. But yeah, the stand your ground laws are, you know, part of the National Rifle Association agenda. Mayor Bloomberg of New York the other day had a press conference, and he was with a military leader who said that, you know, soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq do not have as much freewheeling power to use their weapons as we're now giving citizens in some of these states. In other words, if a soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan says, I shot somebody because I felt under threat, that is not an excuse. And these are people who are in a battle zone. So, I mean, it is time to take a critical look at these laws and yes, possibly repeal them.
Yeah, quick look at that, Steve.
Good luck on the repeal, because concealed carry, stand your ground, Castle Doctrine, all of these laws are tremendously popular with citizens because people do not believe that the police and the court system are doing enough to stop crime in this country. And I bet if you asked New Yorkers, they would even agree with that.
We are talking with Steve Prestigard and Tony Palmieri during this edition of The Week in Review. We'll talk lots more about state politics and recall news in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time now for the Week in Review quiz. What musician emailed Governor Scott Walker this week about Governor Walker's use of a song on the campaign trail? If you think you know the answer, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will give you just 5 minutes to call in your answers. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we will send the winner a book featured on the program recently. We'll also announce the answer to the quiz question at the end of the program. We are talking about the news of the week with Tony Palmieri and Steve Prestigard. And let's concentrate the rest of the Week in Review on recall politics. And this week was the deadline for candidates to submit their nomination papers. The recall candidates have filed, ads are running. The Democrats held a candidate forum in the race for governor. Governor Walker officially kicked off his campaign as well. So let's Tony, let me get you to weigh in first on the field, especially of Democratic candidates that we have running for governor.
Well, you know, I believe that Walker and whoever the Democrat is start off with probably 44-45% of the vote. So really, this recall election is about 8 to 10% of voters. So I think Democrats have to make a decision, and those are mostly independents we're talking about. So which of those Democrats are more likely to get those independent voters? Now, the establishment Democrats are lining up behind Tom Barrett. Union leaders have lined up behind Kathy Falk. But Vinehout and La Follette, I think, have a lot of grassroots appeal. So if I had to predict, I would think that Tom Barrett has somewhat of an edge here because of his, you know, high name recognition. And I think there's lots of people out there that really want to see a do-over of November 2010. Tom Barrett got 47% of the vote in November of 2010, which was respectable given that it was a Republican wave kind of year. But having said that, I firmly do believe that any one of these Democrats can defeat Governor Walker in this recall election.
What's your assessment, Steve?
I'll tell you, the one candidate that actually I think has maybe an opportunity to make it a close recall race is not Tom Barrett, and it's not Kathleen Falk. And I only base this on the one statement I've seen, but Kathleen Vinehout made a comment about how it is we need to stop dividing business and labor. And, you know, the Democratic Party has been at war with business in Wisconsin for basically since the early 1980s, which is when I started following business climate sorts of things. I don't know that Kathleen Vinehout has enough A, name recognition, and B, money in order to make real inroads in this race. Barrett and Falk obviously have more name recognition, but that's not necessarily a good thing, particularly when you consider that, you know, both of them are, I believe, two-time losers in statewide races. You've got, but it is, I have to say, as a non-Democrat, I find it fun to watch, you know, the Milwaukee Democrats and the Madison Democrats beat on each other.
Well, we have AskMe, the Public Employees Union, this week apologizing, saying it was inappropriate and over the top to send out a link to an anti-Tom Barrett video. The video, many say, misrepresented Tom Barrett's position on collective bargaining. Is talk a little bit about whether the Democrats are, you know, divided, Tony Palmieri, and whether unions don't think Tom Barrett is a friend to labor.
Whatever division there is among Democrats is far, far outweighed by their unity in wanting to get Governor Walker removed from office. But there is a pretty stark difference between Falk and Barrett on how to handle the collective bargaining issue. Kathleen Falk has signed a pledge saying that she'll veto any budget that doesn't include the restoration of collective bargaining rights. Barrett says he wants to have a special session on the issue. I mean, you know, both of them are going to need Democratic majorities in the Assembly and the Senate to get that done. I think Tom Barrett is trying to frame himself as the more calming figure who can restore some sense of peace to the state, which has been, as he has said metaphorically, in a civil war. Whereas Kathleen Falk's theme seems to be, look, this is a war, and we've got to fight it with the tools that we have, including the veto power of the governor. Again, I do believe that there will not be one Democrat who will vote for Scott Walker because of some division within the Democrats. Ultimately, Democrats, and I predict the majority of independents will vote to recall the governor.
There are also so-called fake Democrats. I think Republicans call them protest candidates in the recall race again this time, in the race for governor and the Senate recall races as well. Apparently, to make sure there was a primary on May the 5th. Is that, do I have that, May the 5th? And I'm wondering, Steve, is this reasonable? Is this right to run fake Democrats?
Well, the last time I checked, you were not required in this state to be registered in a party to vote, for starters. You have to declare your party preference when you walk up to the polls. the standard that I infer from this, which is that, you know, you can't ever, you know, be in a party different from the party you're in, that would mean, of course, that someone who actually has a fair amount of respect for Nancy Nussbaum, she ran as a Republican for Congress in 1994. She ran in the Senate recall elections this past year. Essentially, what it says is that you can't ever change your mind about parties. First off, the recalls are illegitimate. And secondly, the fact is that the Democratic Party has done an excellent job of getting rid of people that don't adhere to the most liberal line of the party. Whatever happened to anti-abortion Democrats? There used to be some. What happened to Democrats who believe in fiscal responsibility?
We don't have time to debate those issues. We have to debate the fake Democrats, since that's the news of this week. And we, I'm sorry, I said May 5th. It's May 8th. The primaries are May the 8th. Tony, fake Democrats.
I think it's kind of shameful, but I don't think that the lawyer trying to get the Government Accountability Board to declare it as fraud, I don't think that will be successful, but I think it is a shameful thing. The fact is, these recall elections are very legitimate. This is a great example of people at the grassroots level trying to hold our government accountable. I mean, this governor tried to overturn and did overturn 50 years of settled law, labor peace, without even holding public hearings. And, you know, these recalls are important, I believe, because I think we have to send out a message to future candidates, especially for governor, that if you run for office saying you're going to do one thing and then you go in an extreme opposite direction, Governor Walker said as a candidate he was going to be a tough negotiator with unions. He did not say he would try and take away their power, make them illegal, or what have you. This is about accountability, not just for this governor, but for future people running for office. It's very, very legitimate.
We congratulate Roxanne in Marinette. She is the winner of our Week in Review quiz this week. She will get a book featured on the program recently. The question was, what musician emailed Governor Walker this week about the campaign's use of a song on the campaign trail? The answer is John Mellencamp. Governor Walker kicked off his recall campaign this week, and he played this song while at a campaign stop in Milwaukee and some other communities around the state.
Good morning, I'm Veronica.
Oops, that's not the song. This is the song.
Well, I was born in a small town, and I lived in a small town.
Well, rocker John Mellencamp sent the Republican governor an email that informed him that Mellencamp supports labor rights and collective bargaining and the fight for a living wage. And while Mellencamp did not ask Governor Walker to stop using the song, he wanted him to know that. So we're almost out of time. Should he stop using that song, Steve Prestigard?
I hate to say this, but Republicans, it seems, are really tone deaf about rock music. If I were him, all I would play is Taxman repeatedly between now and November. That would get the message across perfectly.
All right. Well, quick input, Tony.
Yeah, he should stop using it. And by the way, John Mellencamp would be in the House Progressive Caucus if he was in the Congress.
All right. Thank you both very much for being with us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You too.
Tony Palmieri and Steve Prestigard, our guests this week in the Week in Review. Thanks to Amanda Magnus, to Rob Verrett, and to Bill Martins for producing this program. We'll talk to you again on Monday. More on recall politics in our state capitol report after 7. I'm Joy Cardine.